Okay, go ahead, Leonie.
Oh, good morning from Australia, everyone, and welcome along to this introduction to the great science of esoteric psychology. There will be two intense webinars on the subject, and then the third one will be a summary of the science. So welcome along. And on the next slide, there's a great, great quote which comes from Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, and I'll read it. It says, "Psychology holds the fate of humanity in its grasp, and it has the power to save the race. The reason for its greatness and usefulness lies in the fact that it lays the emphasis on the relation of the unit to the whole, to the environment and context." So I'll just start there, and that's just my way of introducing the subject. And I'd just like to just greet everyone and have you just say hi and from where you are calling or from. Could you just unmute everyone for a second, please? That's good. And so, Brenda, how are you this morning? Or in Shanghai, what time is it?
It's 8 o'clock in Shanghai, and I've just travelled from Thailand, and so yeah, I've been jetting around, and everything's really good here. So thank you. Hopefully, I can stay connected through the whole webinar this time.
That'd be great. Lovely to greet you there. Murthy, are you able to connect with us? How are you?
Yeah, madam. I have connected. I'm fine.
And what time is it in India?
This is exactly 5:30 a.m. of 2nd April.
So, welcome along to the webinar, Murthy. And Rachel, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks.
And where are you talking from, and what time is it?
New Zealand, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, great. Welcome, Rachel. Tracy, how are you?
Hi there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm in Auckland, New Zealand, and it's 1 o'clock here too.
Comfortable time for you, and nice to talk to you again. And Yvonne, mm-hmm. welcome along again. And how is it, or what time is it in the US at the moment?
It's 8 p.m. Friday evening, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, USA.
And welcome. Well, we've got a wonderful collection around the world, and of course myself, I'm in the US. We have BL, who's in North Carolina at the moment, and Astrid, the other admin person, is in Brisbane as well with me. So now let's focus on this great, great science of psychology. And I started to read the quote that the Tibetan gave us, and I'll continue it. He said, "It studies man's equipment and apparatus of such contact." So we're talking here about the various bodies. "And it seeks to produce right adaptation, correct integration and coordination." And of course, that's what exoteric psychology does. All the counselling that takes place when people are mentally troubled is all to help them find balance within, help them understand why the stress that they are experiencing is happening. And so the exoteric counsellor, or any counsellor, does try to understand what is troubling the person to help them to solve their psychological, mental, emotional dilemmas. And so, and then the Tibetan goes on, "and release the individual to a life of usefulness, fulfillment, and service." And that is the goal, of course, to help the person free themselves from a psychological dilemma that really freezes them in time and space. And that's what happened to us when we have troubles that hold us, when we don't resolve our troubled emotions, when we don't clarify our troubled thoughts. It's as if we get frozen psychologically in time and space, and we stop moving forward on our spiritual journey towards enlightenment because of that. And so this is why it is so important to, as we all realize, to try and solve these dilemmas. And if, of course, we don't, then we see the all the psychological troubles that we currently see in the world today. And as the race becomes more mental, we're seeing the appearance of a greater number of psychological problems, and also some new problems are coming up, like autism has really only been around noticeably in the last 30 or 40 years, and that's becoming more prevalent as well. And all of that has to do with the increase of the race becoming more mental, becoming more educated. So we're seeing all these problems. And so, of course, from the point of view of spiritual growth and our journey towards enlightenment, it is so very important that we have a science that helps people solve the dilemma that they find themselves in, and so that they can keep moving forward as a soul on their journey towards the light. And that is something that we all individually are trying to do for ourselves. Some of us are counselors, and we want to do that for other people. And whichever way it is, it's we have this just this wonderful tool that the Tibetan has given us. And in the next century, we will see esoteric psychology really grow in its influence in the race. So do we have any, and the next clip, thanks Astrid. And I've just got here the little picture, I think you've got it in your book, because when he talks about the relation of the whole and its study, our equipment and apparatus, well, there we just have a little synopsis of who we are in terms of our equipment. So at the top, we have the star representing the one life, the universal life, as it were. Then there is a thread connecting us to the spiritual triad, also called above that our monad, or a spiritual spark that a higher star could also represent. Then we have our spiritual triad of Atma, Buddha, Manas, connecting us with our soul body, our soul consciousness, which is really the body of the triad. And the soul is seeking to work through our personality equipment, which is our mind, emotions, and physical etheric body. And when we become integrated, of course, we have a personality body, which is not shown in there. We also have in that little diagram the Antahkarana, which connects the soul and spirit to the physical apparatus via the brain. And it's so important, of course, because if that Antahkarana and the consciousness thread which comes through it and connects in the brain, if that gets snapped or there's some trouble with it, you get idiocy, there's no consciousness, nothing behind it. All we have is the animal self, and we don't have a consciousness behind it, because the soul, which is the source of our consciousness, is not able to communicate with the physical apparatus. So it's a good little diagram, just gives you the overview of that. So are there any questions about that? And remember to raise your hand at any time. I will take questions at any point through the whole webinar. But just so far, do we have anybody would like to say anything?
I don't see any questions.
No, okay. Next click. Thanks, Astra. Okay, so let's go to the next one. So this is the whole root of the whole esoteric psychology. It's all about energy. And so, organic problems aside, the problem, i.e. psychological problems, is one of energy. The relation or non-relation of forces, the clashing of energies, the inability to handle inpouring energies. And if you remember this, and nothing else, but of course you will, if you remember this, well, you will get the gist of esoteric psychology. When we approach the problem, when we approach the science, we are doing it from the point of view of the energies, the different types of energies. We're talking about the rays here, of course, and how they play through a person, through the various bodies, and how some of those ray bodies fight with each other, clash with each other, or clash with other people in the environment. And that is, you could say, from an energy point of view, is the whole cause or the whole underlying problem of esoteric psychology. It's because there are various energies playing through us, playing through the world, and some of those energies are not harmonious with other energies, and this has a destabilizing effect. Just another click. Thanks, Astrid. So do we have any questions about this at all? And I've just got a few little graphics just showing how the energy plays through the various bodies and how we have a problem going on because of all these energies clashing and warring with each other. And when we think about it, when we just look out our window and we think of all these energies pouring through and how we're all generating energies ourselves and directing them out, it's not surprising that we have clashes of energy with other people. Certainly I've had my personality clashes through the years and still have them, and I'm sure every one of you have had that as well, and a little bit further on we'll be able to talk a little bit more about that. Okay, next slide. Thank you, Astra. Next click. And so here I've got a little bit about the basic understanding to adopt as we approach this great science. As we have, the true psychologist must add to exoteric understanding the fact of the soul, the true man which is behind the personal man and his or her incarnation, and is driving the experiences on earth. This must be central. And of course, this is where exoteric, purely exoteric psychology absolutely falls down in helping people, because it tries to explain a problem from the point of view of the mind, as if the mind were autonomous and as if its troubles could be sorted out exclusively in the mind or in the emotions. There is no acknowledgement of the underlying consciousness and the fact that it is the soul which is driving our experience. It is the soul that starts our new incarnation. It is the soul which pushes us into these situations. And so every time, I don't know if you're like me, but when I find myself in a struggle with someone, I've got a Ray 4 mind, so I'm always struggling with someone, Ray 1 personality, always having these clashes. So I hope I've lessened them over the years. I try and remember that the soul is trying to teach me something. And if I wasn't having this, if I'm having this altercation or something, it's because there is a limitation in my understanding and the wisdom of the soul is not playing through. So I try and remember that, and it does lift my consciousness up if I remember, so that I am more holistic and inclusive in my approach. And of course, immediately the whole dynamics of the energy really does change at that point. So the fact of the soul is so important. Esoteric philosophy, which states that we are souls on a journey across lives, whose purpose is to expand consciousness through the medium of the mental, emotional, and physical bodies, and that we have to demonstrate this on earth. There are a lot of people who don't really realize that a part of us being our souls and our learning experience here on earth, we have to demonstrate our mastership over the energies and forces while we're on earth, because it is through the physical body that we have to demonstrate this. And that's why coming back into incarnation is so important and vital, and why we should really cherish the opportunity that we have here on earth to really expand our consciousness and move forward on the path and towards liberation, stepping off the wheel of karma and freedom to the higher realms. It's only while we're on earth that we can do that. And so that's why it's so important to keep striving and struggling through our issues, trying always to be more inclusive, to be wiser, to be wiser in the expression of our Mars energy, our emotions and our kindly thoughts, etc., is because we have to demonstrate this on Earth. Point three, spiritual laws such as karma, the laws of love and rebirth. These must be factored in. Such vital laws that guide our whole experience down here. And we know, I'm sure that you know, as soon as you really read, or perhaps you had a understanding already about the law of karma, what you give out comes back. I certainly really adjust my behavior, started adjusting it as soon as I really understood how this law worked and how it was working through me and how I observed it working through me. The things I did, these came back to me, whether this was something positive I gave out or something negative, I could see it coming back. And it seems as I'm getting older and a little bit further on the path, the karma comes back to me quite quickly. So I really, you know, am trying to work with this law. The law of love is something that we all have been working with and trying to express more completely as we go. It is the key to the whole of our expansion of our consciousness and traveling along the path. Because it is really the law of our universal spirit, of the solar logos, you could say. We are here to learn love because our great originating energy, the universal logos, is here to learn about love. And so we're all cells in its body, and so we are partaking in that great experience. And the law of rebirth, of course, is absolutely important and vital. The Tibetans said these points will be major releasing agents. If we hold these before the man who is severely disappointed with his life, or woman, future opportunities for happiness or perfection are still a goal that a person can strive for. I know when my sister passed away about 4 years ago, she was not on the esoteric path, so she had none of these understandings. And before, about 3 months before she died, I remember sitting down with her and managed to bring this into her and talk about how crossing over and how her husband and our father would be possibly there, and how in the future she would have future opportunities. And it really transformed the whole death and dying experience for her. I could see it in her face, the lightning around her. So I was very careful with my words, as we must be when we are dealing with a person who is crossing over, who doesn't have esoteric understanding. But up until then, of course, so often people will not acknowledge you're dying. And if you read Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's book on death and dying, it's such a great book. And how she was, I think she wrote it in about the 70s or something, or 60s, and how important it was to start talking to people about passing over. And we, of course, esoteric students, can start factoring in these other laws as well to give help expand understanding. Then the structure of man must be recognized, of his emotional, mind and physical etheric bodies, and the effect of the soul as it works through the chakras. So not everyone would be sort of ready for that, but there are some people who are very interested in health who already have an understanding of the chakras, of the meridian lines. And so these Eastern teachings, excuse me, are filtering through into Western understanding about our bodies and medicine, which is an absolutely wonderful thing. And then, of course, the psychologist must have an understanding of the ray energies and other forces which qualify a man's life. So these are very important statements which I've just gathered together, and really are important in the study of this great science and in our application of it, if we're going to be helping other people. But we help other people, don't we? Anyone in the solar system who has a kind heart, if somebody is troubled, don't we turn to them and we try and help them out of their dilemma? We don't have to be professional. We just have to be a kind friend and a caring person. And so understanding these great principles and applying them to our own life helps us become a greater solver of persons' dilemmas and problems, just because we have that understanding, we're applying it to ourselves, and so we have that wisdom to give to other people. Would anyone like to add anything at all to, or remark or comment or ask a question about any of these points we have on the slide, or anything associated with it? And BL and Astrid, please chime in if you have something you'd like to add.
Okay, I don't see any hands. I don't see any questions.
Okay, all right. That's fine. Well, let's move on then to the next slide, please. And so here is a, this is an updated version of a chart that comes from your workbook in Esoteric Psychology 2. I put this amended chart up just a few days ago, so if you want to get the more recent chart, here it is. And so it really is quite a good chart and gives an overview of the problems in the step-by-step way that the Tibetan presented them. So there are two major groups. First, we have group A, three major groups of psychology problems: cleavage, integration, stimulation. And remember, easy to understand if we remember what I said about energy. We're talking about cleavages of energy. We're talking about a problem of integration with energy. And we're talking about a problem of stimulation with energy. And we have, I'll go through, come back, and we'll go a little bit more through in each of those divisions shortly. Then next month, we're going to be covering this more fully, this section. We're going to be doing Group A in this webinar. Next month, we'll be doing Mystics and Disciples, Group B, people living a spiritual life. And it's really problems which arise in our energy systems through the accelerated development which is occurring as a result of soul energy pouring through. And so we got the soul is really starting to manipulate the life at that stage and affecting us mentally, emotionally, physically. And so there are a whole set of problems that arises then as well. We'll be looking at that next month. Very, very interesting. Those are ones that especially are pertinent to us. But of course, we would still have some of that belong in this group A here. And perhaps we could, I'm going to be talking a little bit fully with a cleavage shortly. But with cleavage, so we have energy divisions. And so we have divisions in the nature between our soul body, our mind body, our emotional body, and our physical body, because each, all of these bodies have their different energies and the personality nature, and they clash with each other. We don't resolve that dilemma of clashing, warring energies until we really reach the enlightenment stage with full integration, where the soul takes over the whole nature. The soul, of course, is our source of wisdom and inclusiveness and stability. And as we move closer to the soul on the path, we are gradually integrating ourselves. And with every integration, it's quite wonderful, as the result of the work that we do is that we become more calmer. We find greater inner peace. We find greater inner stability. We find it easier to handle our pain, to overcome our struggle. And that is the great blessing of doing this inner work, to understanding this science and applying the laws that are given to us, doing our meditation, because all these tips help bring about inner peace and stability and therefore greater happiness. And I don't know about any of you listening at all, but for me, this was the motive that got me onto the path. I was so riddled with emotional pain and deliverance struggle that I thought, I can't live with this. There must be a better way. And it actually took me to the Theosophical Society, which is the first point of connection for me. And I started reading about all these great subjects, had great teachers. And then I started finding that I had some control of what was going on, and I started finding greater inner peace. And for me, that was the great blessing and the reward of my study, my application. And I'm sure this has been the same, or I hope it has, for all of you as well, which is why we do the work. There's always an incentive for doing the work. The payoff, as psychologists say, what's your payoff? Well, for me, the payoff in doing all the study, meditating is, and that is to find greater inner peace and happiness. Do we have a question from Murthy? There's a question, yes. Marka.
Yes, we do.
Yes, if you could unlock him, thank you.
Okay, I will. Let me read what he's got, and then I'll unmute him. He says, please explain a bit on the Antikarana.
Okay. All right, just going back, perhaps we can go back to the previous, slide two, thanks, Astrid. Going back again, and one more. Another one. Yes, so the Antikarana, also called the Sutrakma. So it really, the silver cord are its various names, and it is that cord of consciousness and of life that connects us with our spiritual source. So there are two real threads. There is a life thread which comes through it, which anchors in our heart, and that is that gives us life. And this is the life of spirit that gives us life. This is the universal life, the first aspect that brings us life. So that is carry through the Sutrakma, but the Antikarana is related more so to the consciousness thread, which is that source of consciousness which is coming from the triad and the soul and anchors in our brain. And so, and there are three threads that come out. There's one that goes to and they go to the various chakras, and that's our source of communication and with their soul. Now, in most people, that Antikarana has not been built between the brain and the soul and the brain and the spiritual triad. But meditation, occult meditation, builds it. And so every time we meditate, and if we do it correctly with the occult model, the Raja Yoga method, then we build that bridge and we connect to our soul. And through that inner work and building that bridge of light, we are gradually building the bridge of channel of communication, which is what another way of describing the Antikarana, so that the soul can communicate with us. So when we hold that alignment, the soul communicates, we communicate if we're successful, of course. And so for that period that we're really concentrating on, that when we're new, we are building that bridge. And then if we're new to meditation, then it starts to dissolve. And so that's why we have to meditate regularly, because every time we do, we build that bridge again. And eventually, when we're meditating regularly in the morning, but also are holding a meditative attitude during the day, then it really does mean that we have built that bridge, and soul is able to communicate to us through the Antikarana at any point in time. And all of us would have that experience, because we've all been assuming meditating for quite a while, that we do have greater soul communication with our soul, because we've done the inner work. And then later on the path, we extend it further and we build it to the spiritual tribe, mainly to Buddha, to the intuition, but that Antikarana is that bridge of consciousness, goes beyond that as well. So Murthy, does that cover your questioning about the Antikarana?
Okay. Yeah, mostly you have covered, madam. I will check. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Murthy. Okay. All right, so we can go, click back now to slide five, I think it is. Yes, thank you. So just coming back then to the just covering overview again of these energies, psychological problems, cleavage, these divisions in the nature with war with each other. Then when a cleavage heals, so we've got these clashing energies fighting with each other, and so imagine it's our mind and emotional body clashing and warring with each other. And then when we start to heal it and we have an integration, and this can come with another set of problems, which is problem group two, integration, because what happens for a while, the body starts swinging. So just imagine we have mind and emotion, or we have a healed emotional body, because you can have cleavages within the emotional body itself. But let's imagine the mind and emotions have gotten to a line, there's a merging of it. And what happens then and most of us, I think, I can certainly relate to this. I can relate to the cleavage problem, relate to this. We feel, because there is greater energy, greater inner harmony, we have a greater sense of ourselves and our wisdom and our wonderfulness, but it's because we've done all this inner work and we have achieved this greater sense of being, of peace and that. It can, what happens with some people is that they try and think, well, I have really, let's put it this way, you big note yourself, this is the essence of the problem, or you think you can become very egotistical. Egomania is one of the results or the psychological problems that can happen with integration. Narcissism, I think, is another one where people think they are so wonderful and so great that everyone should love them, should listen to them, to what they have to say. Of all the problems, that is the one that the Tibetans suggest is the most easy to heal. So he says, generally leave people alone and after a while they are, heal themselves. And then the stimulation, we have some real problems that arise in that, and we'll look at those a little further in this webinar. So that's just an overview. Let's go to the next slide, Astrid, and we will have a look at the problems of cleavage in a little bit. Great. That's just an overview. And just another click. Thank you. So there are three cleavage levels, really. And I've got a little diagram of a ripping heart up the top. And so one of the cleavages, and the reason that I put up that broken heart, is one of the cleavages that most disturbs us and hurts us in our life is when we break up with someone that we love and there's this rending, tearing feeling. So that's a cleavage that is happening between us and somebody else. But the same tearing can happen within us ourselves, especially in this first set of problems, which besets the Atlantean emotional man or woman, a cleavage within the astral body itself. And so what we have then is we have competing desires. So we have a desire, I might have a desire for a chocolate cake, but I have another desire to be healthy. And so I have these competing desires. And we might have a desire for some sort of sexual experience when there's another pure side of us who wants to be more celibate. We have these competing desires within the astral desire nature itself. These inner cleavages, especially this astral cleavage, can bring about a cleavage between us and our environment, so that life is feared. And there is great difficulty relating with and understanding others. And this, one of this gives rise to antisocial introverts. We can also, of course, have a cleavage from more mental cleavage, and we can have a cleavage with our ideas. But I'm talking here about the cleavages which occur as a result of fear. A fear and a lack of understanding, which is emotion buried so deeply within the human psyche. And so it brings about people who isolate themselves and cut themselves off from other people. And so we have this great problems that occur. And one of the ways that we can see it really playing out in the world today, in the United States especially, are by these children who become alienated from their schoolmates, who brood about it and then go out and get guns and kill people. That's one real problem we can see. We can see another one arising within the Muslim fraternity, where people have become, feel that they are disenfranchised by the new host country, for example, and become very angry and brood about their injustices. And then somebody comes along for example, talking about the subject we're talking about, whether you're a Christian introvert or Muslim introvert, someone comes along with a very hateful message. I can think of Hitler talking to the German people as well and saying, well, the cause of all your problem are the Jews or the infidel or the non-Christians, you see. So we get this false messenger coming along. And because the people are wrapped up in their introversion, their emotional body, and we're not thinking, not rationalizing clearly, they are targets for this sort of propaganda. And so they do react, the emotional body gets all poisoned with all these toxins. You have this big emotional vomit, as it were, and you go out and kill and do something to hurt other people. So it can be very dangerous, that cleavage. Next one, thanks. Especially when an intellectual person comes along and gathers these type of people into a mob and then sends them off. And we can see the suicide bombers going off, being directed by the intelligent person behind, or the abortion doctor killers in the United States going out, being sent out by some tricky Machiavellian Ray 3 person behind, going out. There's always an evil mind directing this unthinking group, the Atlantean group. Then we get the cleavages which can happen with Aryan mental man. So Aryan is a word, of course, which describes a state of consciousness and has nothing to do with the Nazi race. Just as Atlantean is a word which describes emotional consciousness. And so Aryan man, or the cleavage here, is a cleavage between the mind and the emotional nature. This brings about a cleavage between a man and his life task, between his mind and the goals he sets himself on one hand, and on the other, his emotional nature and desires, which would take him in another direction. I can really relate to this, and can't we relate to it when we think, time to meditate, our mind is telling us, oh, we should sit down and meditate. Our emotional body is saying, oh, I just want a few more minutes in bed and sleep. And so we see here this cleavage taking on, and sometimes the emotional body wins and you don't get out of bed. As we get more disciplined, we drag ourselves out of the bed and drag the emotional body along with us. And so we can see how that cleavage works out. We can see it working out when we have a clash of ideas with other people. And so this is the normal way it works out. So you say something, put your words out there, and other people don't like the words that you put out. So you have this disagreement on the mental level. And this is the way it is in the world. We are all different. And the whole experience we're being taught, of course, is to be more inclusive and comprehensive in our understanding and our thoughts, to be able to step into the shoes of any other person and be able to look at life perspective from their eyes. The more comprehensive our development, the more our consciousness expands, the greater our wisdom, the greater chitter that we take in, the more completely we are able to look holistically at a situation and become wiser in what we have to say to anyone that we might be not agreeing with or agreeing with. But certainly the expansion of consciousness helps us become wiser in our dialogue with other people. We can see in the world so often, it isn't, we have these great different ideologies and people arguing, Christian, Muslim, argue. Republican and Democrat, argue, argue, argue. You know, everyone wants the same thing, wants to be happy, wants their family to be happy, but you get so hung up on these ideologies, argue, 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 and it's a great source of war in our world, clashing up these clashing ideologies. But also the human way, the human race sorts out its problems, because essentially we are a fourth kingdom in nature. The fourth ray is our basic ray, our harmony through conflict. And so it seems that the normal and natural way for human beings to sort out their problems is to have conflict as we reach for harmony. And we're seeing that's why we have all these wars down and through history, is because of this basic urge within us, energy within us, which wants harmony, and we're prepared to go to war to get harmony. The more evolved we become, more spiritually consciousness, then of course our ways of moving through conflict becomes more refined, and so we can bring about harmony without too much disturbance in the energies or in the people around us. Any questions about those two points so far? It's very interesting. Who identifies with either? Let's start with the Atlantean. I can identify with this, and then I'm going to ask you to perhaps share your experiences, because I get tired doing all the talking. I certainly, when I was younger, in my teenage year, Cancerian, Scorpio rising, water signs, I was so emotional and so beset with my own personal pain, and every rejection sent me into the doldrums and everything. It took me ages until my first Saturn return I started getting out of that. But I can really relate to this cleavage when the astral and feeling rejected and hurt in my emotional body. Who can remember or still that as part of their experience, or still experiences it sometimes? What about you, BL? Can you relate with that?
Yeah, sure. I can relate to it. I think I make a perfect antisocial introvert. And I always have, which is really, I think the only thing that saved me is that I have that Leo sun and it wants to be, you know, on the stage. So when I am forced out, I can, in fact, interact a little bit, but I'm more comfortable with myself than I actually am going out in the environment. And it's not so much that I'm afraid of it. It's just I'm antisocial. I know that is hard to believe, but here we actually have a volunteer or a question here, so.
Just before we go on to that, I would just like to say it is normal and natural as we evolve along the path of Tibetan have said, we do become more introverted, because what's happening is we are withdrawing from the world in our energy, and that's so we do become more introverted. And so that is a normal and natural part. But of course, we still relate with the world as the ideal model, but so can really identify with what you said. Yes, we have questions. Thanks. Who would who was first, Bill?
Okay, Brenda has a comment here that she typed in. She says, I'm on audio and the slides. It helps me to stay connected, and not sure if you unmute me if I will lose the connection. So, okay. We're gonna keep her we'll let her do her typing and everything. So hopefully we won't lose that. All right. I've just messed up somehow. The question.
Well, I've unmuted Tracy. Tracy, I think I have. Tracy, can you speak?
I can. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What is your comment or question?
I was just thinking about how a few years ago I really wanted to work from home, and I've been working as an administrator for a long time, and I got into a job where I wasn't very happy with it, and I became physically ill. And during that time, I ended up leaving work, and I became quite unwell and wasn't working at all. And I remember, now I look back on it, I really isolated myself. I didn't want to be around anybody at all. And yet later on down the line, now that I have my work, my clinic that I run from home, I've sort of gone full circle and I'm doing what I aspired to do. But I kind of had to go through this real cleavage of separating myself from the world before I got to it. And I think I have a Pisces moon, Leo sun, and Capricorn ascendant. And I think my Capricorn and Pisces can make me quite introverted, wanting to be in my own space. Whereas Light BL, my Leo sun, does give me that capacity to be with others and like to be in the spotlight. So I have that real kind of cleavage sometimes.
Oh, good. Thank you for that, sharing that with us, Tracy. Yes, I think we can all identify with that. It's so often, doesn't it, happen that we go through this great stress of losing a job or relationship breaking up, only to find that there is something greater waiting for us. And I know philosophers say that, but in fact, you know, it really does work out that way so often as well. So thanks for sharing that, Tracy.
Okay.
Leonie.
Yes.
Okay, we've got another comment from Brenda.
Yes.
She says, I'm so glad to hear that. As I like to be introverted, but when I go out into the world, as I'm happy within my own space, yet I am the most friendless person and feel very connected to the world. Oh, she said she meant to say friendly. Most friendly person and feel very connected to the world and speak to people, nearly everyone.
That's wonderful. I do think that I could really relate to everything that has been said. I am absolutely an introvert. I've always thought I have a Ray 1 personality, which is the introverted Ray anyway, and I'm Scorpio, which is so loves to hide away, and Cancer. And I had to train myself to be social and to step out. And I used to have an anxiety attack every time I went into a room. I didn't know people, or I'd do give a talk or something. And it was something I had to work through, because I thought, if I'm going to be a teacher and do this, in my job, I was a manager and I had to hold these seminars and everything, which is my outer training. And then I used to do it because it paid money, good money. And that was my motive right back in my corporate days. And so, but we do these things. And so I am happiest as well in my own, with my own little private world here. And I go out, but through the training, as we everyone has said, I can relate to just about anyone, a reasonable person out there, because we've all developed our hearts and we're trying to be kind and everything. But I'm a natural introvert as well, so I can really identify with everything that everyone has said so far. Do we have a comment from Murphy?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
He says, if cleavage, integrity, I think he means integration, and stimulation are three stages, why integration will take more time to attain?
I think we're talking about two different things here. The integration problem is just one that happens when our personality vehicles merge, or we bring about the final integration, and the one that takes longer, Smurthy, is between our soul and personality. That is the final one. But we're talking here about an integration problem. So of course, when the soul and personality integrates, there's great harmony that comes, and not the problem that I was talking about with the clashing of energies, or the thinking that you are most wonderful and that other people should adore you. That's an integration problem, which is different really, and it just says, well, from integrating you can get this problem within the personality vehicles, which is different when we're talking about integration with the soul that brings about harmony. Does that make sense?
Here, let me unmute him. Does that answer your question, Murphy?
All right. It might be the connection. So perhaps if later you might type your, if you've got more questions to ask, just put that, type us a note. Thank you, Murthy. Okay, so let's just another click, that's Astrid, and we'll have a look at the third part of this. And there we have it there, aspirants and disciples, a cleavage between a man and his soul, which I was talking about. The little sketch there is supposed to be the personality and the soul there, lovely little icon I've got there, you get the point. Produces sequentially a dominant selfish personality. So even though the soul is bringing about this integration and our physical, emotional and mental bodies have all become integrated and so the personality appears, then still there is, before full soul influence, it becomes a very selfish, ambitious and a dangerous person in the world. And so we have examples of Hitler, perhaps Mussolini on the more extreme side, but we've got powerful personalities like Margaret Thatcher, all the great leaders, Obama, David Cameron. These are all personalities, and depending upon the amount of good they do for the world, we can say they have more soul in them. The more evil they are and hateful they are, we say there's less soul in them, and that's our way of sort of identifying how soul infused that they are. But that is the great cleavage that finally we are trying to overcome, and all of us have that unless we're fully taken the third initiation and there is full integration from the soul. We have this one that we're tackling at the moment. And just a bit of therapy, cleavages are bridged when the soul works through the mind to heal the clashing forces and ideologies. So this is a statement from the Tibetan. So what does this mean in terms of helping someone, counselling someone? Well, the way I've done it is saying meditate on goodness, meditate on soul, meditate on kindness. These are words that we can use to non-esoteric students or people to help them understand the great spiritual law we're trying to give them, to help them somehow, and this will bring about the healing of the clashes. There are various esoteric techniques that have been developed that all are really a demonstration of this therapy guideline in action. So there we have a problem of an overview of the cleavage problem. I'm looking at the time, we need to clip along a little bit. Any final questions about cleavage, the problem of cleavage? Okay, do we have any chats about it, Bill?
No, we've discussed them all.
Okay, our next slide then. So let's have a little closer look at the problem of integration. So when a cleavage is bridged, so I've got given you an overview of these, we'll go into a little bit more detail. When a cleavage is bridged, an integration problem can arise. There is a sense of great well-being and potency, and with the best motives, of course, trying to make the world over into our image, and there are three types. And then we get the egomania, the narcissist, extreme love of self, and a little therapy underneath. We need to realise we're an integral part of a much greater whole. We have the children of the baby boomers, is called the narcissistic generation. It's all about me, me, me. And of course, back in the 60s and 70s, what we were being told to do is tell our children how wonderful they were, how they could be anyone in life. And it's given rise to this generation of children who believe that they are wonderful just by being themselves. And they don't have to do, looking at the problem now, they don't have to do anything to be rich, to be famous. They all wannabes, wannabe this. And of course, I'm being very general, you understand, not everyone's like this, but describing the problem section. And they just by being themselves. And of course, we get a lot of these entitled children. They're doing one of the problems we have in Australia here that's been coming up into the news lately is we have these entitled children they're in their 40s and 50s now, who their parents are still alive, who've got all this property, and what they're doing is taking they're getting control of the legal aspect of things, and they're putting their parents into age homes, kicking them out of their houses and taking them over their property. And we've had so many of these in Australia that it's got into the press. And so this is a real example of these narcissistic people who are believing they have a right to take this property off their parents who did all the hard work to get it, just because they are their children. So that's one way it's playing out in Australia. And so we might have a little bit of this within us ourselves, but the Tibetan seers usually leave people alone. Of course, what happens when you've got a narcissist who's always talking about themselves, people take off, don't want to be around them. And so it's usually other people will sort you out if you're a narcissistic person, has been my experience. Next click, thanks, Astrid. Then we get the fanatics. Driving everyone the way we have come. If I did it, you can do it. We've got this Alan Jones, this person on radio. You have your Fox channel in the United States with that Bill, what's his name, on Fox, who's is such a prophet of rightness, stands on the moral high ground of being right all the time. So we all see these around the world. So there's these fanatics who says, if I can do it, you can do it. If it worked for me, it can work for you. You have to do this, you have to do that. And they forget or fail to recognize the differences in background, ray type, point in evolution, tradition, hereditary. I know in New Zealand, because I'm a Maori origin, back in the 60s and 70s, it was still very, very racist back there. And the whole opinion coming across, or the one that Maoris took exception to, was that the Pākehā would say, you've had the same opportunities for education, you've had the same opportunities for this and that, and yet here all the Maoris in jail, all the Maoris getting sick and that, and they had not accounted for the rapid growth and consciousness that the Maori people have had to overcome just in a few decades, coming out really of a stone age, emotional astral stage, into the Aryan age and the whole modern age. And so that was a failure to recognize point in evolution. Same in Australia with the Aboriginals. I hear it all the time when we pour all this money at Aboriginals and they're still not solving their solutions, unable to have not got this esoteric understanding that we're dealing with the most ancient people on earth who have not got the mental, emotional equipment of a modern person, is unable to respond to the mental approach to healing, to sane living, just this lack of failure as a Tibetan point of view. And the therapy is just the need to realize and accept differences of ability. That is a major problem in the world today, this fanatical one, if I can do it, you can do it, unable to, failure to recognize and accept differences of ability. And this goes to races, to religions also, perhaps, into cultures and nations as well. Then we have the third point, please, Astrid. The overdevelopment of the sense of direction or vocation. So this is what happens more so with us who are Aryan and minor. Just look at that woman's face. I think I used to look like that in my corporate days sometimes. I used to be a real bossy boss and order and try and get people to do the jobs. And I used to work out on paper how long it took people to do these different jobs and time them and think, well, why can't they do them? I've timed this, I know it can be done in this amount of time. Well, it got me into a lot of trouble with all the people who worked for me. Of course, they didn't like me. And so I really learned from that, not liking me and people telling me they didn't like me and what a bossy person I was. So I learned from that. So overdevelopment, a sense of direction after this We've done this bridging between mind and emotion. We try to make our mark. We become highly ambitious, intellectually focused. We negate our feelings and emotions in order to succeed materially. And we see people out there in the world. And it's also the way very often in the Western world that men are supposed to be. Men are supposed to be strong and not have feelings. Well, going back into the 60s and 70s and the 80s perhaps, luckily, it's healthier today. Its feelings are acknowledged. But going back into the 60s, 70s, no, men had to be strong, perhaps the 50s also. Weren't allowed to cry. Women were weak. They could cry. Men never cried. And so we had these soldiers coming back from war with PTSD, breaking down all over the place because men are tough. Men don't acknowledge their pain or suffering. And so we have all these sorts of problems which has arisen from that. But So these are the three integration problems, and for a lot of us it would be the fanaticism or the overdevelopment sense of direction that may have tripped us up along the way. So does anybody relate with either of those or more than one of those different forms of the integration problem?
Hi, Leonie. This is BL. Yes. I've got a comment here from Brenda. But first, I would like to say that yes, I know I do. Probably a little bit of all of them, really. But you know, I've always looked at it as it's a form of evolution to have that integration, but it's like any new skill. Practice makes perfect, and sometimes it takes a lot of practice working on this kind of stuff. So I just wanted to add that. Brenda's question is, she says, can a cleavage return on another level if it's not healed completely? She goes on to say, is it like saying the lesson will keep coming back bigger and bigger until you learn?
Oh, I would think that would be correct. I mean, if you have, for example, a cleavage, a fear, a great fear, I'll go to my own one, of a great anxiety when I meet new people or go into a new situation. When I would just avoid going to new situations, every time I did happen to go, because socially we do meet new people, I would have this anxiety attack again. And so the cleavage was still there. And it was only when, the way I addressed it was, I recognised what was going on. I named the fear. I saw that I was having an anxiety attack. I saw that it occurred when I went into a setting where there are people I did not know. And I thought, oh, I understand it now. And so when I was going into a new place, I was prepared. I would say, remember, you usually have an anxiety attack, new people to meet. We'll be okay. We can manage this. And gradually over the time, it's totally gone, virtually gone. I really never, ever feel that, unless, of course, sometimes I've still had it, I've recognised it, comes up again. If I go into the room, because I'm not often in this environment, of very wealthy and socially prominent people, then I feel the anxiety coming up again because it's not something I'm sort of used to and I have to work on it a little bit. Not that I'm ever often, very often in, you know, in the presence of royalty, as it were. But it does happen. So yes, certainly that it will arise because you've got the cleavage, and until you heal it, you won't. It'll keep coming up. And of course, remember, the method of healing is understanding coming from the soul. So understanding what is going on, an intellectual understanding, and taking some steps to help yourself through those moments, and giving yourself a little loving pat on the back and things like that can all help. So I hope that answers your question. Okay, any other comments? All right, next slide, thanks. And we're good, we're going on time today. And so we come now to the more serious, this is the more serious of the three. Of course, the cleavage is a problem one, but you get some real dangerous types coming up from some of the levels of this. So there are physiological and psychological problems which occur when our nature is overstimulated, disrupting normal life rhythms and perception. Click again, thanks Astrid. And the first point is the overstimulation by mind, by mental thought. And this gives the most dangerous types perhaps that we have in society today. And so for point one, we have intense thought. So this really intense stimulation of mental thought comes in from the mental plane. And remember, the rays that play through the mental plane are primarily ray 5 and ray 4. But it's ray 5 that we're talking about in this first group, because it is very separative. Ray 5 is a separative mind. And so these rigid-minded people, it spurs partisan action, sectarianism, ID fixe, which is the fixed-minded, rigid-minded, narrow-minded, and violent partisans. And so you can think of these people in the world. You could say Hitler was one of these with the fascist ideology, very narrow, very, kill the Jews, kill the homosexuals, and that to bring about the ideal master race. You see how dangerous this type is. And I'm trying to think of the, what about in Irish politics? Astrid, you had that, what was that clerical man who was very partisan?
Ian Paisley,
that's right. I used to watch him, if you watch him on YouTube, and they've all got this fiery way of speaking and narrow-minded finger-pointing. You can see this really intense thought coming out through the Ajna chakra, and you know, that this is the way you solve your problems. You cut off this person, cut off this race, cut off their heads, do this. That'll solve all the problems. What did Mussolini say? If they didn't run the trains on time, kill them all, shoot them all, and all the trains for the first time in Italy were running on time, because of that. Some people said that that was a good thing, of course. Okay, so that's the first real type. And then it gets sort of worse in a way when you get the intense thought coupled with astralism. I'll go back first to that first one. The Tibetan used the example of the Spanish Inquisition and Torquemada, I think I was with this. And so they had this idea, it may have been part of the second one as well, this idea of the perfect religion, of course, and how to solve it. So the Spanish Inquisition was the most cruel method, of course, of proving that you were a believer. You know, you often had to die. I remember one torture they used to, in the Middle Ages, used to put people on these poles and dip them in the water and bring them up. If you died, you were a believer. And if you were still alive, it meant you didn't believe, so you got burnt at the stake. Well, yeah, there's something really sick about that, of this first group. And then we've got the second thought, very dangerous when this intense thought, narrow thought, goes down and poisons the astral body, spurring a person into action. They're not that the others aren't action, but the first group often work through other people. These are the minds that send out the Muslim clerics, that send out the bombers, the Christian clerics that send out the shooters, you know, these evil minds sitting behind getting other people to do their work. Well, this group here does their own work. And so we have the mental introverts, and of course you can have geniuses come up with this, but they are really in their own world and pondering away and have this desire to create or do something. If you're more advanced, you can come up with some wonderful creation, and then we call those people genius. But a lot of them that have raised 2, 4, and 6 in them come up and they become these antisocial brooders. And so we can see there is a connection with this group and a group in cleavage, that first group in cleavage. And often you can have these problems together. And so we have a cleavage, you're antisocial, You're locked into your own little emotional or mental world, and then you have these thoughts. You're also mental, and so you have these narrow thoughts coming in. And if a thought, for example, is this person is responsible for all my suffering, then and it's not qualified by any wisdom, that can come through and it can feed your poison emotions. You become this toxin. Just imagine what they look like. We can see energy, real black, red, green, violent, toxic things with energies flashing out, lightning points and that. And they have their vomit, you know, and they go out and do things. And so we have in point 2B, you can get these fanatics, maniacs, cyberbullies, stalkers, psychopaths. You know, these are these intelligence. See, Ray 3 gives the intelligent, mental extroverts. They're more intelligent. Working with the Ray 6 desire nature with its toxicity gives rise to all these intelligent predators that go out and do these things. You know, they say psychopaths have no feeling. Extremely intelligent. You can see the trickiness of Ray 3 Mercury working away there through them. And so yeah, those are lower types. Higher types, of course, you get theologians and that. You get completely decent and wonderful people who move using the rays more positively. But of course, the difference between is less soul influence, greater soul influence, less infused with spirit of goodness and love, more infused with spirit of goodness and love. And that's just what the rays stay the same, but the consciousness that takes them on board and expresses them is different and on different levels than the path, which is absolutely what we all understand. And then we have the last group, the mentally self-obsessed and megalomaniacs, mainly Ray 1 and 5. And here is probably the true cold-blooded mentally self-obsessed. I'm just trying to think. Hitler had a lot of Ray 6 in him. Ian Paisley is probably a bit more of this type, though he had a lot of Ray 6 in him as well. Perhaps Genghis Khan may have been one of these. We know that he was probably a disciple in his way, but I still think he went out very mental, I think. And other mental types that have a lot of power and are completely obsessed with themselves. Jim Jones of the Family of God, I think, that led the group to South America that killed themselves. I forget the name of the country. There was a Ray 1 and 5 when you watch him talking, and they're very a megalomaniac, actually believed that he was God, I think, and deserving. And when, of course, he predicted all these things were going to happen and they didn't, rather than lose face, he killed all his believers and killed himself. Okay, so we can see the intensity of this group and the stimulation of energy that comes through that causes it. The next group, thank you, Astrid. And this is more with people who are on the path, but still not the problems of mystics and disciples. But once we start to meditate, especially mystics who are not yet aspirants on the path or on the path, and I wanted to ask the question, do people recognize the difference between, because you can get people on the path who are mystics as well, and that's just the esotericists who are more mystical in the approach, perhaps more of the second ray. But what's the difference between a mystic who is not yet on the path and an aspirant, the equivalent of it, who is on the path? Would anyone like to hazard a guess? Tracy and Yvonne, first, we haven't heard from you. Okay.
An aspirant. Okay. Mentally polarized.
That's it.
A mystic, yeah. When I was a mystic, I was like emotionally polarized.
Yeah. That's exactly it. The mind is developed and is working. That's right. Fabulous. Thanks, Evelyn. That's all I really wanted. Tracy, do you have something else you would add with that?
Just that the mystics are sometimes more heart centered than the analytical mind approach.
It's interesting because you see, the thing is, as we go further, because here is the thing, the heart chakra does not really open until around the second initiation. It's quite advanced. And aspirants, mystics, may have a lot. What they often have is they have solar plexus feeling rather than true heart inclusive feeling. The mystical feeling is more for my group, my people, people I love. It's more sixth ray, you see. So I would think that thinking of what Yvonne said, the more you, because the further you go along the path, the more mental you become, but your heart keeps opening as well. So you are also very heart-centered as well as being very mental-centered.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just hold on, please. Sorry, my husband just disturbed me. So it's a very good thing. And thank you, Tracy, for making that comment. It helped us to really get clarity on this. So if we just remember that the heart chakra and true heart inclusiveness, true soul love, because the life thread is anchored there, it does not really start to open widely in its higher sense until we have got our emotional body under control. Now, it does start to, the heart chakra does start to open in business people, for example, or political leaders who are part of the group, but it's only in its very lowest sense, and they become group oriented and they are very magnetic and attractive to people because, and their heart chakra is working in that lower level, but they are not inclusive, loving in the higher sense. And mystics who have not yet developed their mind, because true love, it's so interesting. True love is the ability to speak and think words of love. And we have the merging of the mind and the heart. The ability to think and speak words of love is the definition I use for true inclusive love. When you can think love with your mind, you are truly opening your heart chakra and merging your mind with your heart as well. So we get perhaps people now here, going back to point three, we get people who are becoming attracted, a lot of ray two, devotional in their solar plexus, maybe a little bit of heart opening up, inclusive, but still not really intelligent enough to be discriminating, which is a great trait of representing soul development. They can fall prey in here, and so, well, we all can actually. But exhilaration, depression, mental fever is something that we get. I've seen sometimes in aspirants or mystics who find the teachings and start rushing around and studying all the different teachings and talking about it. It's like they're in a mental fever, and that. And so this is the effect that soul energy has had on their part of their mind, their throat chakra that's open, and also on the emotional body. And then we get the ones that does affect even disciples and aspirants. Glamour, which is the distortion of reality through emotionalism. I can really identify with this in my early pre-esoteric training days of having a feeling about some people. For, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. You eat meat, therefore you're not spiritual. That's a really good one, perhaps that might be even more of illusion than that, but it's the distortion of reality through our own prejudices and that. That's glamour, and illusion is a part of that. So that is a big problem in the world today, and most people, because most people are centered and focused in the emotional body, have this as their major psychological problem from the esoteric point of view. And then we have the guidance problems of upsetting dreams. A lot of them are sexual, depression and that. So people who guidance problems, we see all around the world with some fundamentalist Christians. God speaks to me. God tells me to do these things. You're wrong because God has spoken to me and I know what's right, and therefore you are wrong. And so you see these often, if you know, in some of these political broadcasts. Really, I love watching some of the fundamentalist Christian preachers early in the morning. Some are wonderful. Joel, something, I forget his name, he's wonderful, so inclusive. And some are very narrow. Benny, what's his name? I can't even remember their name. Harangue about really demonstrate their talk all the time about God speaking to them, and yet the words that come out of their mouth are so hateful and so separative. And so this is what happens in this group of people who are devotional, being attracted to soul, but the solar plexus chakra and the emotions are still ruling them. They fall prey to all these different sorts of problems. So we can see it's quite a big group, a powerful group. And so I wondered if we've really come to the end of the information I'm going to give out today, and we can would like perhaps any questions at that point about the whole great topic that we've covered so far, especially about this slide. Any questions?
I don't see anything so far, but I wanted to mention, you know, of all of these, of the stimulation, I didn't understand fully what was going on at the time, but the one that I experienced, and not by myself really, it was a group of my mother's friends, was that the glamour. My mother was metaphysical, and her friends all studied, and one of the particular group was, she had the guidance problems. She didn't have the upsetting dreams, but God spoke to her. And the rest of the group all really just kind of fawned around her, and she just ate that up, you know. She was the disciple, and she was the leader of the group. And you know, as a young girl, you know, in my teens, even I could see that there wasn't something quite right about the adulation that they really had for her. As much as I really enjoyed her as a person, and I admired what the group was doing, especially the fact that she's the one who handed me esoteric astrology from Alice Bailey and got me started on this path, I found out later, when my mother died, just what some of the negatives of this glamour that she was going through were. And she really believed herself to be more than I think she was. And for being a spiritual person, it hurt me, the things that she was capable of saying. But now I can understand the perspective, me as the observer looking on to it. It just gives me a good outlook on understanding these things when I study them myself and when I help students study them.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up, because that's a huge problem in sitting for development circles, which was very, very strong. I think it's still very strong in Australia and New Zealand. And you have these all these workshops on developing your psychometry skills and your clairvoyance skills. And I used to go along to them, and I had similar experience. I would have these people who were channeling, and I'm not talking about any other channelers but the ones that I experienced, and who would therefore be adored and put on a pedestal by everybody else because they were channeling, only because they said that they were getting these messages. And then some of them were quite rubbish that come out, but people, it's as if you put your intelligence and you know, behind the cupboard door and just accept, because this exalted person who's communicating with this exalted being is saying these things to you. And of course, when you study teachings, you realize that they're just people who are still working from their animal brain in the solar plexus, who are seeing through the astral plane, who are probably much lower in development and are lower in development than any intellectual. Any hardcore agnostic, atheist or skeptic is streets ahead in spiritual development that these people are working through the solar plexus chakra. And of course, getting this information out, I have seen myself or felt a decline in the sitting development and the putting such people on pedestals because the information is getting out. And of course, in a Tibetan says something, evoke pride of place on the path, you know. And if, you know, if you're a channeler and you read something while you're working from your animal brain, well, that's not very inspiring and it might give you pause to think. So, okay, so there are one of the things that have the upsetting dreams, a lot of them are sexual. And the Tibetan, and it, we talked about the example of saints or monks and people in nunneries who were forced to be celibate. And, of course, they were praying to God. And so a lot of their visions and hallucinations they were having were really unhealthy because God, they're marrying God and it was a sexual marriage. And they used to have all these visions of sexuality and terrible, you know, dreams that they were having, or maybe not terrible to them, but he spoke about these things. And, you know, likewise, if you're had something terrible happen to you in the past, you can have some really violent dreams, but these are all to do with this group of stimulation problem. And of course, what happens when soul is coming through, one of the parts of our nature that is stimulated is the unconscious. Light starts to get thrown onto the unconscious, and so unresolved hurts and pains that are down there start coming up, which is quite normal and natural, and we deal with them. But sometimes in sleep, of course, something comes up that we haven't dealt with, and so it comes out as a bad dream. So are there any other comments about this slide or what we have covered today? Yvonne?
Yes, and I just wanted to mention this. Years ago, when I was in school for healing, there were a group of us, and there was this one girl that we thought she was really great because she was always talking to her guides and she was channeling archangels. And I remember we went to this, would go to New York for 5 weeks a year, and it was Barbara Brennan. And we were down in the jacuzzi in the hotel. We took over the hotel. So she had a group of us in the jacuzzi, and she said she was channeling Archangel Michael. And I started to think, and I thought, what self-respecting archangel would channel to a bunch of people in a bathing suit in a hotel? This didn't sound right to me. And then she was always talking to herself and saying she was hearing voices, and she probably was, but they asked her to leave because she was like nuttier than a fruitcake. But, you know, it took a while to see this. But we weren't into this because it was glamorous.
Isn't Barbara Brennan the person who wrote that Hands of Light?
Yes, she is.
That's a famous book. A lot of people, I'm glad you've given me that, not, you know, but that's really, really interesting. But thank you. That's exactly what I was talking about. And when you were talking about Michael, I can remember I used to be a co-editor in a New Age magazine. I remember we got this letter from Archangel Michael, and he said, the letter was to go into the letters, all you other pseudo Archangel Michaels had better watch out because I'm the true Archangel Michael and I'm going to do things to you if you don't stop claiming to be Archangel Michael. And I thought that was wonderful because it put the whole thing in perspective. We had all these people channeling. I used to have a lot in my early days of Mother Mary. It seems that every second woman I was meeting was channeling or an incarnation of Mother Mary. You know, and all these saints walking around, all these Mother Marys were doing their non-spiritual things of maybe screwing around, excuse me, or alcoholism, or all these Mother Marys, you know. It was so funny. When you think back on it, Yvonne, can't you have a good laugh?
You know, there was seemed to be so much channeling. Everybody was channeling.
That's right. Yeah. And you felt, if you were like me, you felt like you were inferior for a while because you weren't channeling everyone. All the I used to have was my skeptical.
No one was talking to me.
No. All I was hearing were these skeptical thoughts saying, oh, what a you know, idiot that person is. And I would say to myself, Leona, you just don't know anything. My soul saying to me, go for it, girl. Anyway, okay, thanks, Yvonne, for your comments. Any other thoughts about what we learned today? Well, I'd like a final comment from everybody. What was it today from the webinar that you're going to take away with you that you most enjoyed? So if you could unmute everybody, If you could unmute everyone, please, Bill. And I'd like you to just offer a comment about why that. Yes, Yvonne, what is it today that you were going to take away with you?
Well, it was a good review for me.
Unmuted.
Because I am cleavage and integration, because that always confused me. And I studied it a couple years ago, but I've forgotten a lot of it. So I enjoyed that, and it made it clearer for me. I thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for that then, Yvonne. Tracy.
A better understanding of the psychological dilemmas. Yeah, it's just really interesting for self and others. Yeah.
Thank you, Tracy. Rachel.
Hi. Small point. I think it was what you were saying about think love with your mind and merging your mind with your heart. It's something that's come up in the last few previous months for me. So I've been thinking about that for a fair bit.
Good. Thank you, Rachel. And Murthy, are you able to speak?
Yeah, madam. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, Murthy. Yes, I can. Do you have a comment to make? Something that you most liked in today's webinar?
It's very good. I have got a lot of inputs in that. I have to study further.
That's very good, Murthy. I'm still waiting for your first paper to come in. So looking forward to that. And Brenda.
Yes, here we go. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Beautiful. I'm so glad and grateful that I could stay for the whole webinar. But for me, which is not necessarily about cleavage and integration and stimulation, but just working in my mind, all the things that I've done so far, you know, I've dabbled in kinesiology, I understand the chakras, I'm a yoga teacher. I'm trying to put the esoteric psychology and all those pieces together so that I can then be able to speak. do you know what I'm saying? Like, I have confidence. This is just about listening to everybody and their comments and then just understanding my own confidence that it's okay, that I do know more than I think I know.
Yes, and I think, are you intending to counsel in the future, through astrology or any other means?
Am I what, sorry?
Intending to do counselling to advise people. Well, we all are going to be counsellors. I think from what will help integrate it for you and did for me is finding your own method of using this information, taking what it is that appeals to you and putting in a little way of a little method of helping people. I'm just thinking it might be a really good paper to put into the course. I think there might be something put together a little bit of counselling thing, but it's when you apply it and think about how you will use the information to help someone actually and sit and do it and write it out in a paper, that it brings it all together for you. And I'm thinking that that might really help you, Brenda, but it is something that I think you're asked to do in the papers that are coming up in Great Quest 2.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much for your webinars and BL as well.
Okay. Well, thank you. Then that brings us to the end. Bill and Astrid, do you have any final comments?
No, I don't. Except thank everybody for attending.
Yes. All right, then. Well, I would like to thank everyone for attending as well. And I look forward to seeing you at next month's webinar when we're going to be looking at the chakras, particularly and those problems that really apply when we're doing esoteric meditation. So I hope you can all come along then. So bye for now and thanks for attending.
Thank you both.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Leonie.
Thank you.
When is next month?
The 29th.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.